Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can stay up to date with everything happening here at the station. Download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. Back for hour number four in the producer's chairs. Of course, the producer of Jeffrey Wright and Company, he is George Ruggiero. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. You had some extra airtime as well yourself. Don't sell yourself short.
Anytime, anywhere for Justin. Justin helps out, and whenever Justin needs me, I am always willing to help out. Actually, the truth is, I'm willing to go on anyone's shows. I just don't get asked, so not really sure what that says about me. My company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday, he does actually ask me on a show a decent amount. I'm always happy to oblige. He's the host of VSiN Primetime, VSiN's college football, college basketball betting podcast. You can also see him on VSiN's Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. Central Time. Check your local listings. Download the VSiN Watch app to get more of Tim's takes on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
Good day, man. It's good to be back. Had a little day trip yesterday. Got to take in Oracle Park, home of the San Francisco Giants, so that was pretty cool. And then watched a whooping on my television screen last night.
I think we'll get into it during the list. It's interesting that you went to, is it the artist formerly known as Pac Bell? What is it to you? Like, there are certain stadiums, like, I think we can agree, Pittsburgh's always going to be Heinz Field. Even if it remains Acrisure or whatever. Like, there's certain ones that it's always going to be.
Carrier Dome will always be the Carrier Dome.
100%. I think Staples Center will always be the Staples Center, right? Crypto.com or whatever it is now. I think it will always be the Staples Center. And the one, though, is it always Pac Bell to you, or is it AT&T Park to you?
I think it's more AT&T. That's just what it comes to mind. Now, I've never been there before, so I didn't, and I'm not a Giants fan, but I think AT&T was what I probably mistakenly called it the most leading up to my trip out there.
What got brought up in my college group chat was, what division in baseball has the best collection of stadiums? Because the NL West is up there. I would argue Petco and Oracle are elite. Coors Field is phenomenal, and it's a great place to go watch your team get a win, because it felt like everyone at the Rockies game that I went to was just not there for the Rockies. Guys our age, the artist formerly known as Bank One, which I think what now it's Cap One, in Phoenix. That was a big one for us to play on video games because it was a new stadium with the pool in the outfield.
I've been there.
And then Dodger Stadium is really big.
So I haven't been to Dodgers or Coors. I've been to Petco, and I've now been to Oracle. Both are probably top three.
I think they are elite stadiums.
So I'll just run through. I have not completed the trifecta or the run on all of these stadiums. NL East, I've got three. AL East, I've got three. NL Central, I've got three. AL Central, I've got two. AL West, I've got zero. NL West, I've got three. So I would say if you like history, AL East is kind of cool with Fenway and Camden Yards, I think is great, but you obviously have Tampa as a dump. And
well, there is no stadium.
Yeah, they're playing in a minor league ballpark.
Correct.
Which might be better. And I've always wanted to go to the Sky Dome or whatever they call it now.
I think it's Rogers Center.
I've always wanted to stay in the hotel. It was kind of always on my mind. You know, NL East, I'll say, is kind of a collection of, like, you know, I'm a Nats guy from D.C. I've been to that ballpark a million times. It's fine. Philly, it's kind of the same way. It's fine. City's Field, it's fine. They're not bad. They're not dumps. They're not.
I've not been to the newest. I had been to Fulton County, and I'd been to the artist formerly known as Turner Field. I've not been to the new Atlanta one.
I've heard the new one's nice, right?
I mean, it's they've done what kind of a lot of people have done, where they build the stadium kind of out. I think it's out in like Cobb County, and then they've built like the city around it, if you will, like the shops and then like the mixed use around it.
I'll say this: I think the NL Central might be underrated.
Okay, so Pittsburgh, I would argue, is one of the most underrated stadiums.
That's my number one. I don't know if it got surpassed yesterday. It is gorgeous.
I think if it's underrated, here's the question. I don't think Oracle's underrated because I think everyone that goes acknowledges it's great. I think Pittsburgh just doesn't get the love that it should for being a great ballpark.
Right. I mean, I've been to Wrigley twice, both a Friday afternoon matinee, both lived up to the billing.
I'm a Cardinals fan, and I love going to Wrigley.
I haven't been to Busch. You can speak to Busch more so than I can.
Busch photographs better than it operates. It is fine. Fine plus.
I think the Brewers, I went there. I did a series there in 21, had a blast. I love that city, as we've talked about. I think it's a good ballpark. Not really walkable, but great. I mean, great tailgate scene. And inside the ballpark, I think is very solid. I haven't been to Great American Ballpark. Looks to be fine.
So when I went to Great American, I've been a couple times. I also saw a 3-game series where Barry Bonds saw one pitch and he put it into the river. So it's tough for me to ever say Barry Bonds shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because I can't get there. It is a solid stadium that felt like it was built on a budget.
But I'll say this, for it to be your worst stadium in a division, that's pretty solid.
The views in Busch are, I don't know, the thing about Busch is like the seats, the sight lines aren't great for being a new ballpark. They're not the best. And then underneath, like, the concourse is very dark, and I'm a big, give me some light. Another one of my favorite stadiums, I doubt you've been there. I love Safeco, or now T-Mobile Park, whatever it is. Seattle.
Yeah, I thought about doing that trip. They played the Nats played there 2 weeks ago, and I thought about just doing like a quick trip, but I was like, that's a 2.5-hour flight. That's not like the hour, you know?
Yeah.
So, I would say if I had to rank them, I think it's a battle between, if you're going top to bottom, you know, we're talking SEC, not Big Ten, right? We're not going top.
I think
heavy.
You have to say the best division.
I say Central versus the West in the NL. I think those are the two best. All right. I think San Francisco and San Diego, that duo, is probably better than the NL Central.
I don't.
However, I would say the historical ballpark, even though I haven't been to Chavez Ravine, I would say Cubs is better than
Dodgers. I feel like I'm qualified to weigh in on that. Wrigley's better than Dodger Stadium.
Okay. And then we've kind of got the
I like Dodger Stadium, too. I want to be clear. But Wrigley's a different animal.
And then we've kind of got the, all right, what's the worst ballpark in the NL West? Arizona, probably?
So,
and once again, it's all things relative.
Yeah, I guess. You I've only driven by it. So you,
I went to a game down there. I enjoyed it. I flew down, did a day trip with my boys. It was super easy to get in and out of. We took a train right from the airport downtown. We went and got, you know, a little boozy brunch action, hit up a bar to watch a little.
Yes, queen.
Yeah, then we went, then we hit up a little bar to watch some soccer.
Mimosas.
I think I went Bloody Marys, but
respect.
Regardless. And then we hit up the game, and then we, I think we went to like Dan Marley's restaurant after the game to watch, I want to say, Suns versus, who would they be playing in the Western Conference Finals?
Was that the Mavs?
Maybe 2 years ago? Maybe it been 3 years ago. I can't remember.
I think it was the Mavs, I believe.
So I think proximity-wise, the stadium was kind of weird. You know, you're indoors. Watching baseball indoors is kind of weird to me. Just like it was like a tin box.
So if that's the week one,
it's like that versus Great American Ballpark. And then I haven't been to Denver, and it feels like it's Denver versus
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
And I'd go, I'm a Cardinals fan, and I'd give the nod to Coors.
Yeah, I think the NL West is the best.
Yeah. So we got to that. Also, we have a game seven. And
yes,
so a couple of things before we get into game sevens in general. I weirdly thought last night was super relatable. And here's why. I know we always, you and I are big on the psychology angle in sports, you know, look ahead spots, what are letdown spots. Like, you know,
what are you talking about? I just spent 20 minutes of my podcast this week going through all the Power Four teams' letdown spots.
And by the way, I don't think that's worthless. Like, I think those things are real. And I'll just never buy into like the, if you're someone that tells me like momentum is not a thing, or you're someone that tells me, you know, there's no such thing as a heater, whatnot. It's like, no, you just haven't played sports enough. Like, it is a thing. Like, if you've played enough, if you've watched enough, if you've been involved enough, you know that it is a thing. With me, though, what I thought was super relatable is, all right, the Thunder come in, and they know they've basically put this thing on ice, and it's now a formality. Halliburton's banged up. How effective is, even if he does go, how effective is he going to be? Will show up. They took I felt like at one point they had like a 10-point lead in the first quarter, and it was just like, all right, we're good here. And then
it was 10-2.
Yeah, lo and behold, the Pacers said, not so fast, my friend. They take the lead, and I don't think they ever gave it up again. I mean, they just absolutely put it away. But what I thought was super relatable about it is when you're kind of in your mid-20s, you just kind of think, we can get them again next time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I got plenty of time. Like, whatever, we'll pack it in, and we'll get them the next time. And they may be entirely right, because they're going to host Game 7, and did a single guy play in the fourth quarter? I don't think so, right?
Yeah, I don't think they did.
I mean, they emptied the bench. I think it's also fair to say, though, I mean, for the most part, it felt like Indiana kind of emptied the bench, too. But I just kind of thought it was super relatable in the sense of, like, it's a young team. All right, not our night, whatever. We'll get them again next time. There's just kind of the feeling of, there's always tomorrow.
That is kind of the weird thing about this Thunder team this postseason, is that I want to say they don't have the killer instinct, because they want to rip your throats out in Oklahoma City. And they pretty much do every single time you go there, outside of the fluky games won of both the second round against Denver and the NBA Finals. That's where I'm curious about Game 7 on Sunday night.
The question for me is, does that attitude bite them?
Maybe. It really could. I mean, they're going to a Game 7 against a team that is a great three-point shooting team. Like, you're putting yourself in a very vulnerable spot. Now, did they go into last night and be like, we're good, boys. Let's win this one on our home floor. It wasn't, you know, they weren't going to try to close out a sweep. It was, let's close this thing out in Game 6.
No, I think what got them is they saw, like, hey, man, they were on the floor. They saw what the Pacers looked like with Halliburton hurting. Did that feel like a real threat? And I think they just got popped.
Look, it's so cliche, but it's true. You can't fake desperation. And that's why game two of the NBA Finals was pretty telling to me when Oklahoma City came out and was like, yeah, we can't lose this game. And they said as much after the fact. I don't know what to think of this game seven, because I'd be curious to know how people are going to look at the results of this game, right? Is it a failure from the Thunder? Or is it, holy crap, we underestimated this Pacers team all the way through? And I do feel like, you know, as we talk so much about betting on this show, and what I have been pretty profitable with doing pretty much my entire time betting is, okay, what is everyone saying? Got it. All right, we're going to go the other way. And look, did I think the Pacers were going to win last night? No. But my one bet was them in the first half because I thought they would come out.
Did I think they were going to slaughter them like they did last night? No, I did not. But I was also not willing to bet the Thunder.
No, I wasn't going to bet the Thunder. I knew this would be a desperate spot. I just, you know, the Halliburton thing. I expected him to play, but how effective was he going to be? And you know, he was more effective than I thought. Now, here's the thing that I think is hilarious going into Game Seven. Last night on Van Pelt Center, Memphis's favorite analyst, Stephen A. Smith, said that the game should be a pick 'em. I was like, gotcha. Okay. I've heard multiple people call the point spread disrespectful. And once you got dropping the disrespect line, I'm like, all right, I'm probably going to be on Oklahoma City here. And I don't know if it's going to be first half or it's going to be full game.
I'll say that's the problem. Can this be true? I think this is going to be the smallest home line for the Thunder this series, right?
This series, yes.
Okay.
It was like shorter against Denver, yeah. I thought, because I think it was seven.
Okay, so I'm still not racing to the window to lay it.
No, because the Pacers are cockroaches, man.
They don't die.
They do not die.
Honestly, even as bad as game five, like the final and the way that the fourth quarter felt, I mean, I felt like they were like two or three shots from just basically figuring out a way to steal another one.
Yeah. I mean, it was 95-93. I mean, TJ McConnell was playing, you know, God out there and brings them all the way back. By the way, TJ McConnell, this is where... Has he surpassed the allure of like Matthew Dellavedova at this point? I mean, the dude just goes out there. His stat line last night was ridiculous. 12 points, 9 boards, 6 assists, 4 steals in 24 minutes.
Okay, here's the only problem I have. I think Caruso's more impactful.
I don't disagree. But I'm saying they play on different teams. So
yeah, but
if the Pacers win the title, like, what is McConnell's... I mean, it feels like Indiana's going to build him a statue.
Well, I mean, I think he's in the same tier as Big Shot Bob, Robert Horry. I think he goes into, like, that tier of the guys that you remember from these great teams that aren't the best players. Like, wasn't there a Lakers year where Derek Fisher hit a couple of big shots? Like,
yep.
There's the Derek Fisher games. There's the Robert Horry's. I don't really like including Ray Allen in that group, but like Ray Allen hits the shot that you remember from that series.
I think
Ray Allen's on a different level of the players that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, Ray Allen's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And Jesus. Would you include Andre Iguodala? Or no, because he won the MVP, even though he shouldn't have?
So I obviously, for those listeners, you know, I hate Iguodala, but I think that's the tier.
Because I mean, he's always remembered for the 2015.
Yeah, finals. Because he tells you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the only reason I know Andre Iguodala won the MVP that year, the Finals MVP that year, is because he tells us. And like, that's the other thing. And if I ever saw him on his face, it's like, no, the MVP of that finals was LeBron. It's just his team lost. You should have been like fourth. And like that was like the classic everybody.
No, he shut him down. He just averaged a triple double.
Yeah. Oh boy, man. That took him out of the game. Like, I don't know, because that's the other thing. It's like, what? The other reason why
LeBron averaged 35.8, 13.3, and 8.8.
He took them to six games, and Love and Kyrie both didn't play. Like, it was LeBron versus the Warriors. It was insane.
In the game that he got shut down, he had a 40-point triple-double in game five.
And we freaking
gave
the MVP to Andre Iguodala. Like, everyone there should have their credential removed. Like, you should not get to vote anymore. You had your chance. You did that.
Because
moving
on. Game four, he had 20. He had 20, 12, and 8 in game four. And then in game five, AI shut him down to 40, 14, and 11.
Boy, really took him out of the game there, didn't he?
Oh, man.
The more time goes on, the more absurd that is. Like, in like the fact that Steph didn't win, like, it's just, oh, my God. Okay, so here's the only issue that I have is, like, all right, when we say game seven, best thing in sports, obviously game sevens are great. But we don't have, like, a – my whole deal is I think game seven by itself isn't necessarily what is the must watch. It's what becomes of the game. Like – we remember the 2016, I mean, what a run, what a like a five-month run we had with the Warriors blowing the 3-1 lead, LeBron with a chase down block, 23 is greater than 73. We had that, and then we have Cubs down 3-1, come all the way back and beat the Indians in seven. Like, those are two unbelievable game sevens. Mm-hmm. But my deal is, does anyone remember anything from Game 7 of Thunder Nuggets?
I do, because I had the Thunder.
Okay. But you remember the final and them covering by four standard deviations?
Yes.
Okay. But to me, it's the way the game plays out. Like, if we get a Thunder just win like they did in Game 2, we're going to, I think, be left feeling unsatisfied, right? And we're not going to have a ton of memories of it.
I would say this, and this is maybe more of a big picture question or big picture thought, is that the fact that these playoffs are ending with a game seven validates this postseason as one of the best postseasons I can recall. I mean, I think about some of those crazy, think about all the comebacks that we had. I know one was unfortunately to the Grizzlies, but
yeah, we were able to, that one doesn't, that one really, like, in the list of, like, painful ones, doesn't even crack. Because it's like, once Ja got hurt, everyone thought it was inevitable. Like, you knew what I mean? Like, you quit caring.
You see the Knicks come back from 20 in games 1 and 2 of that series. I mean, you had the Halliburton comeback against the Bucks in game 5, against the Cavs in game 2, against the Knicks in game 1. The Neesmith shots. Like, this postseason has really delivered. Go in seven games with the Nuggets and the Thunder. You know, the Western Conference Finals, I think, were pretty forgettable, all in all.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Lakers-T-Wolves series, I know it was a five-game series, but I think, if I remember correctly, game four in Minnesota was awesome. That was the Minnesota comeback, right?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be, like, this is kind of the reality, and this is what the NBA is really struggling to deal with. Like, when LeBron's in the playoffs, it's interesting. One way or the other, you know what I mean? It's the same thing with Steph. Like, when they're in, like, it's interesting. One way or the other. But I think what I'm more curious about is if Indiana pulls this off, is this the most unlikely champion in NBA history? Or maybe this is the better way. Are they the most overlooked champion in NBA history? Because I think when we keep doing the unlikely thing, it is very dismissive of how good they were from January on and how good they've been in the playoffs.
I mean, they did go to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But I think, to your point, I think the one that gets brought up and will continue to get brought up, rightfully so, will be Detroit. And I'm looking back, and I don't, you know, off the top of my recall, remember the 04 playoffs outside of the Pistons dominating the Lakers. And I think that was shocking because they won it in five, right? They beat this juggernaut.
They had Darko. I the reason why I think it was like my lasting memory of that series is Darko Milicic playing the last 2.5 minutes in the broadcast talking about how the team refers to him as the victory cigar.
That's right. That's a good pull.
That's one that sticks with you.
I'm looking back at 2004. And in 2004, we were still doing the dumb thing of divisions actually mattered.
Yeah.
So the Pistons were 54-28, but they were the 3 seed, and the 47-35 Nets were the 2 seed because the Nets won the Atlantic. So the Pistons were the second best team in the East. The Pacers were at best the 3rd team in the East heading into the playoffs, right? And I think most people thought they were the 4th. Now, to your point, were they being overlooked? I don't think so, in the sense that you had Boston and Cleveland. So,
yeah, I don't regret putting Boston and Cleveland ahead of them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is one of those things where I can...
They were better.
I can hold this... Indiana deserves everything that has happened to them. They have earned it. I can hold that thought. But I also still, if you're making me before the playoffs start, if I'm having to pick the roster, they would have been at best my 3rd roster.
But I think what's going to hurt, I don't know. We'll see how history looks back on this because of the Thunder and what they could potentially be. And obviously, Game 7 will determine a lot. But I think your answer is it's possible that we look back on it. But I think the 04 Pistons looked at a little bit better because, what, they didn't have any all-stars on the roster.
They had, like, 5 starters that were all B-pluses, but they had, they did not have an all-NBA guy or, an all-star.
And then we went out and lost the Olympics that summer, and I remember people were like, we should just had the Pistons go and play for us. I was like, that probably wouldn't have worked.
Well, didn't we have the Pistons coach?
Yeah, Larry Brown was there. Worked out well.
Just that was food for thought.
Yeah. But I think this run... They wouldn't have beaten the Celtics, thought to be at worst the 2nd best team in the NBA heading into the playoffs. But still, you beat the Cavs, you beat Giannis in 5. I mean, let's say this, the Bucks, while they're not a great team, and we know that, and Dame was hurt, Giannis was, 3rd in MVP this year?
I mean, I still think there's a case to be made. Like,
As a first round opponent, that's a good feather in your cap.
I also fall into maybe I'm like the SGA hater, but like I don't feel like I am. I'm just feeling like this. If you let me draft NBA players, I'm taking Giannis before I'm taking SGA. And maybe I am a hater. Like I don't know. You know what I mean? Like but I don't think that's crazy talk.
I think right now, if you're taking it always asks how many years, like, are you building your franchise around them? Because SGA is considerably younger. But I think if you just did it, I'm building a team for next year, I think it's 1 Jokic, 2 Giannis.
I don't think that that's crazy.
No, I don't think so. And then probably 3 SGA, right?
That's interesting. Is he 3?
I think it's hard for me to put Luka there right now at 3.
I think, though, this is the question. If they lose on 7, if they lose in 7, what has he done other than the MVP that Luka hasn't? Be more competitive in a series? Luka had to take on a much tougher team.
True. I'm just saying, off of what we saw most recently.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You have to take him next. I also think that there's...
I don't think you'd be crazy if you take Luka over SGA.
I think SGA's defense is wildly overrated, but I would be insane to say that his defense is as bad as Luka's. That's just not true.
Yeah, he's definitely a better defender than Luka.
But I don't know if he's as good of a shooter.
I think he's better at getting a bucket when he needs it. I think he's a better mid-range shooter.
I agree with both of those.
I don't think he's a better 3-point shooter. He's definitely not a better facilitator, obviously.
I don't think he has the vision. I do also I also think that this is true. I think he's a better leader.
SGA?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. They seem to really rally behind him.
I also think it's fair to say, like, if you're someone running a team, SGA is probably the archetype of guy that you'd want to be your best player. Because you don't worry about, like, What are you worried about SGA saying? What are you worried about SGA doing? Like, he is a business-like guy. I can get where I can. If I'm running a team, I think I would be much more comfortable with that than Luka.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, we haven't talked to Topmeyer a little bit. Like, we can get back into this during hour number two, because I do think that is the aspect of this game seven is.
I think I know what you're doing, because you are captain of the reverse jinx. So I think what you're doing right now.
I'm the reverse jinx when I bet.
You're playing up the, you know, don't get too excited about a game seven, people. You know, more often than not, they're kind of disappointing.
Oh, yeah, no, because
you're trying to bring down the expectations.
I hate the letdown. There's nothing worse than realizing it's the Super Bowl this year. When you realize that was your last football game and you're sitting there in the third quarter, I think a lot of people that hate the Chiefs wound up in the third quarter hoping they scored a little bit just to watch a game. Because there's nothing more depressing than this is it, and what am I watching for? Nothing's interesting going to happen. All right, let's talk some college football. We'll do it with Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. He's also the host of SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week wherever you get your podcasts, on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, this week you've written about the SEC and the Big Ten not being in agreement, and you argue that it is good for the playoff. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I think if these conferences would have immediately synced up on a format, I don't think that would have been good for anybody else other than these two conferences. And ultimately, I don't think that would be good for college football. I mean, before Tony Petitti became the commissioner of the Big Ten, for many, many years, like the SEC and the Big Ten had sort of a low scale
Cold War.
I don't know if you want to call it a feud, but it was at the very least a quarrel. And I think a lot of people saw that as a bad thing or not ideal. I kind of think it's a good thing. Like, I don't know that we need the two powers in lockstep all the time, because when they disagree, that forces compromises to emerge. And I think oftentimes the final compromise is much better than what the initial ideas would have been if the two superpowers just immediately sync up and try to steamroll everybody else.
Do we really owe a thanks then to the SEC coaches? Because it does seem to me that the SEC and the Big Ten actually were on the same page until they presented it to the coaches. And the coaches were like, wait a minute, no.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the SEC coaches might have saved this whole deal when they said, wait a second, we don't really like this auto-bid playoff plan that the Big Ten likes, that your whole season kind of comes down to a playoff game or a play-in game. The SEC coaches got a whiff of that. Got a look at the other plan and said no thanks on the auto bid plan. So and now you have the Big Ten holding the SEC's feet to the fire for the number of cupcake games that the SEC plays during the regular season, and the fact that the SEC plays 8 conference games versus the 9 that the Big Ten and the Big 12 play. And so will we get a compromise on that? I'm not sure, but I don't mind the fact that the Big Ten's trying, right? Like, I think that would be good for the sport.
I want to talk about that because I do agree that if they played 9 SEC games, I'd be in favor of that. I think the Big Ten conveniently leads out, hey, yeah, we play 9 conference games. We don't require them to play another Power 5. Like,
that's true.
I do kind of think it washes out. Like, I know you can rig it. Like, I know you can play the weakest P4 team, or like, if you're in Ole Miss's spot where I think they basically kind of got like a hardship waiver. The Wazoo game gets to count, even though it probably shouldn't. But because Wake Forest canceled the game, like they have this, I do kind of think it washes out. If you require 8 and then a power four game, I kind of think that's the same thing.
Well, the difference is, though, and I agree, not all Big Ten teams play a Power 4 opponent. Penn State is not this year. They have a laughable non-conference schedule. However, if you go pick through it, the majority of Big Ten teams are playing a Power 4 non-conference opponent this year. So the majority of Big Ten teams are playing 10 Power 4 games. Not all, but the majority are, whereas the majority of SEC teams are playing 9 Power 4 games. Only 3 teams, Alabama, Florida, and South Carolina, are playing 10 P4. So it doesn't exactly match out, but yes, I mean, the Big Ten does not require its members to play that marquee non-conference game, which, again, there ought to be. You know, if everybody keeps a level head here, it's like, I'm naive and hoping for like this ideal solution. But to me, the ideal solution would be like, okay, the SEC says, yeah, we'll go to 9 conference games, but you guys got to require your members to play a P4 non-conference opponent, right?
Yeah.
Like that to me would be
a
great compromise. And then at the end of the day, everybody in the Super 2 leagues are playing 9 conference games and a Power 4 non-conference opponent, 1 at a minimum. I mean, that's like the compromise that's sitting right out in front of everybody. And I know the SEC is squeamish about adding that 9th conference game, but they're also working really hard to add weight to the strength of schedule metric in this next playoff cycle. And if you get what you want on that front, because that would favor the SEC, added weight to strength of schedule, if you get what you want from that front, like, that sort of reduces the risk or reduces the downside to adding that 9th conference game, because strength of schedule carries more weight than ever in that future.
What's the end game here, Blake? What are the dates we need to know? Because it felt like a couple weeks ago we were full steam ahead to 5 plus 11 starting in 2026. Now we've had this snag. When does everything need to be finalized if we are going to have playoff expansion in 26?
Yeah, I mean, the commissioners would tell you December 1st is the deadline. Like, is there some wiggle room with that? I sort of think maybe. Like, if you hatched a solution on December 15th and your television partners were on board and the Big Ten and SEC were on board, like, you're telling me that they couldn't get that done 2 weeks after the deadline. Like, I think that December 1st deadline, I suspect, might be a little bit fungible, but I think in general, this needs to be settled before the new year, before Christmas. And I think ideally they want to settle it this fall. Whether they get there or not, I don't know. I mean, we know how slowly these playoff negotiations move, but you know, and we've heard a lot of complaints about Greg Sankey from Greg Sankey's mouth about that over the years. He didn't like, you know, how slowly it moved to 12 teams in the past, and why couldn't they have expanded sooner? But I think sometimes when there is all this infighting between the conferences, like we look at that, our tendency is to look at that as a bad thing. But like, no, the final format they landed on in this 12-team playoff, I think, is a lot better than some of the other formats that surfaced during all that infighting that weren't ultimately approved. So again, maybe I'm being naive with all this, but I actually think that, some of this infighting and everybody not just agreeing to the first idea that's put forward could ultimately produce a sensible playoff, probably an expanded playoff, but an expanded playoff that's still sensible, and B, maybe an even better regular season. And that's the pipe dream, but I think there's a chance of that pipe dream coming to fruition.
Are we all convinced that it's expanding?
I would say it's more likely than not that it's expanding, but Rich Clark, threw the executive director of the CFP, threw that curveball out there. And to be transparent, I was not at that meeting this week, but in reading the coverage of others, apparently Rich Clark, the CFP's executive director, did float the possibility that staying at 12 could happen if the Big Ten and SEC don't align on a 16-team plan. Maybe it stays at 12. And again, I say, like, is that such a doomsday scenario?
No, I mean, thinking, like, is it so bad?
I prefer 12, like, personally.
I guess where I'm at the point is either get – if you're, I've not seen a 14-team format that I like. Everyone I've seen, I'm like, eh, yuck. If you can get me to the 16 with the 5 and 11, yeah, I'd take that. But I don't know if it's necessarily such a bad thing. Like, we're only at this point going to have 2 years of data about a 12-team playoff. Why would we, you know what I mean? Like, we took a decade to expand from there. Like, why not see if, like, maybe we'll get 5 years out and we'll realize, like, this might be the best format.
No, I don't disagree. And actually, even though you say we'll have 2 years of data, if they come to a solution in the fall, we won't actually have 2 years data. We'll have 1 year of data on the 12-team playoff, because they could hammer this thing out before we even get to see the second iteration. And I kind of agree with you. I mean, I guess the reason why the commissioners feel rushed is whatever they decide on is supposed to be the format for the 2026 through 2031 seasons. And that's sort of what's at play here. It's not just that they're deciding for 26. If you were doing this a year at a time, I do think that you'd probably just stay at 12 for 2026 and maybe for 27, like get 3 or 4 years of this and then make a change. But because of the way, you know, the contract works, and they're looking for a solution for that 2026 through 2031 period. So they're not having to do this year after year. But yeah, I think in a perfect world, we'd get another look at the 12-team and maybe even kick that 12-team out to 2026 before we started thinking about expansion again. But the way it's set up, they're kind of feeling rushed, I think, to get that solution from 26 through 31. But again, like, you can always renegotiate that. And
yeah,
if you,
I mean, like, is
ESPN
really going to be like, if you come to them, hey, we're thinking about giving you a couple more games, are you really going to say no? It honestly, it feels to me like they want to get it done because they're not going to say this part out loud, but they know that they're turning their attention to their TV deals and expansion the next time.
Yeah, and they probably want to sweeten the revenue pot as much as they can.
Yeah.
In the meantime, and adding more games is a way to do that. But no, I agree. I mean, like, and it almost, I don't know if Rich, like I said, I wasn't there, but so you're trying to interpret the quote. But I don't know if that was supposed to be like a threat from Rich Clark. I didn't see it that way. But
I took it as like, hey man, this is a reality.
Yeah, this is a reality. I might stay at 12, and it's like, well, if they expected all, you know, fans and everybody to revolt over 12, it's like, I don't know. I think a lot of people that saw that quote were like, okay, that's fine. If it stays at 12, it stays at 12. Like, I didn't have a problem with the seating situation last year. I know I was in the minority. So, okay, whatever. Majority ruled, and they changed the seating to where the top four teams get the byes. But really, that was the biggest complaint, even though it wasn't a complaint from me, it was a complaint from the masses about the seating. And so, okay, they fixed it. What were the other complaints about the 12-team playoff? That there were some blowouts in round one? Well, there were blowouts in the NFL playoff in round one, too. You're not going to devise any playoff of this size and magnitude without blowouts. Some of them are going to occur. But mostly, like, I don't think people had a lot of complaints about the 12-team playoff. Like, yeah, maybe last team in, last team out. But there's going to be complaints about that no matter what the number is.
You know what? My biggest complaint was, because I'm like you, I watch the NFL, so I – like, to me, like, when you saw the college football fans reacting on the week ones, like, oh, this is a group that's never watched, like, playoff football with this much, like, that's right. What happens here. My biggest complaint was it just took too damn long.
Yeah.
By the end, I was just kind of worn out.
Yeah, and the semifinals.
Semifinals was, like, where it peaked. Like, it was two awesome semifinals that Thursday, Friday. I thought that snuck up on me and how great and how much I enjoyed that. But after that, I was just kind of like, all right, I'm done here.
Yeah, and then you had to wait longer than a week to get to the championship game. I think that sort of backfires, too, that you go from, you know, the first semifinal being played on a Thursday, and then it's two Mondays after that that you're getting to the national championship. But, yeah, I think you're right. Like, other than the seating issues that rankled a lot of people, other than that, it did feel like it was drawn out a little too long, too late into January. If they could find a way to condense it down, which one way would be starting this thing on Army-Navy game. I know that's like blasphemous to some people, but I mean, you could do that. You could play first round games the weekend after conference championship. Then you get your quarterfinal games in before Christmas, and you speed everything up a little bit, and you're, you know, around the time you were playing those semifinal games is when you could play the national championship. I think that would be ideal. I don't think they're going to head in that direction, because I still think that we're probably heading toward 16 teams. I do think some sort of compromise will emerge here, because I think the biggest stakeholders want 16 teams, and that's not going to condense the timeline. I think it's going to drag it out further, if anything.
All right, Blake, you have a column up also over at the USA Today, taking a look at some teams that could surprise you and make it to the college football playoff. I want to jump to Michigan, because this is a team that I feel like when you talk about the Big Ten this year, it's Ohio State, it's Penn State, it's Oregon, and then it's kind of a Michigan, I guess, right? So
yeah, squint.
Yeah, the odds would tell you that, might, right, from to make the playoff, to win the conference. It's a pretty big drop. And then, you know, Illinois is getting some love. And, oh, what's Indiana going to look like again this year? And then there's Michigan, right, a team that ended the season as high as you could, really, outside of making the playoff. You beat your arch rival, who ended up winning the national title. You beat Alabama in the bowl game. So I'm curious your thoughts on this Michigan team and why you consider them as a long shot sleeper, because I would agree. I think there aren't enough people talking about the maize and blue.
Yeah, I think so. And because the big issue with Michigan last year was they didn't have a competent quarterback. And even without a competent quarterback, they finished the season playing their best ball and those upsets that you mentioned against Ohio State and Alabama. And so now you insert the nation's number one prospect, not just quarterback prospect, but number one prospect, period, and Bryce Underwood. And, okay, we don't know when he's going to be ready to look like a blue chipper. But if it is this fall, then that addresses the glaring problem that Michigan had to fix. Now, they lost some talent, sure, but they did return several starters off the defense. They didn't bring the whole unit back, but they brought about half that unit back. So I think they're still going to be pretty salty on defense. And so if you get the quarterback position solved, and you pair that with, I don't know if you guys got Michigan's schedule in front of me.
I've got it right now.
It's a joke, isn't it?
Well, that Oklahoma game is weird.
Oklahoma under the lights is tricky.
Yeah. But I'm with you. Like, New Mexico, like, I think the other thing that I found interesting is did y'all not agree that it felt like they were laying the groundwork this week? Bryce could be the game one starter.
Bryce is starting. Oh. I texted with someone this week. I didn't realize Mikey Keene was hurt.
That's news to me as well.
Yeah, so like he's not 100% healthy from what I gather. Bryce Underwood is a heavy starter, and I think they went out and got, what was his name? The East Carolina kid?
Yeah, Jake Garcia.
Jake Garcia. Like, he's the insurance policy in case Mikey Keene isn't 100% healthy from everything that I kind of gathered.
Okay,
yeah,
so
you got a couple group of five guys there if Underwood stumbles. And so, you know, I don't know that Underwood needs to look like a Heisman winner in week one. But, yeah, if you got the schedule there, so you got Oklahoma and you got Ohio State. What's the third toughest game on your schedule?
I would say either at Nebraska or at USC.
So when we're getting down to Nebraska as being your third toughest game, I mean, Nebraska will be fine.
Yeah,
right?
They miss out on, to your point, they miss out on Oregon and Penn State, clearly the second and third best team in the conference, or even first, and however you want to rank
I feel
them.
Confident. I'm voting, I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm voting the third toughest games at Nebraska.
Yeah, and so... overall, I think that's a decent draw. And so to me, it all comes down to Bryce Underwood and whether they are a playoff contender or not. We ought to know by, you know, kind of middle of the season, cause you're going to see enough of Bryce Underwood, I think, cause I agree with you guys. I think this guy's going to be starting in September. And so then we'll know, right? We'll know, is the hype real for this guy? Does he look the part of number one recruit in the nation? Cause if he does, I think there's enough there combined with the schedule that Michigan could be a playoff team. I mean, when you talk about playoff teams from the Big Ten, obviously the conversation starts with Ohio State and Penn State. Yep, no issue there. I think those teams are going to be in. People are assuming Oregon's going to be in. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I don't think that's a slam dunk that Oregon's going to be in. And then you move down the list and Illinois, which brings back like 18 starters, is kind of where the conversation goes next. And I don't mind that. I think, you know, Illinois went 10-3 last year, brings so much back. I think they're going to be in the mix. But it just feels like there's not a lot of dialogue about Michigan outside of maybe Michigan and the Great White North. But
I do like Illinois' schedule even better than I like Michigan's schedule.
I do, too. I do, too. And if it wasn't Illinois on the jersey, I think they'd be getting even more
hype. Yeah, but it's Burt.
Yeah, Burt puffing his chest out. It's a big chest, too.
A lot of room.
Wrigley Field telling Wisconsin fans to shut up, right? Didn't he do that? Take me out to the ball
SEC
game?
Scheduling. I mean, Bielema's feeling himself right now. He's feeling his roster.
I love it. A confident Burt is like content gold. Borderline erotic from when they beat Texas in the bowl game. Like, this – Burt's now just throwing shade on Twitter. Like, this is good for us.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm not sure Shane Beamer has recovered yet from what Bielema did to him in the bowl game, the mind games he was playing with Shane there. So yeah, I think Illinois, a lot of people would feel comfortable saying, yeah, Illinois is a contender, and the name scares them off a little bit because they're not used to Illinois being good at football. But you know, football people, I think Illinois can contend. But with Michigan, I think they're right there too if Underwood is the real deal. If he's not, well, then they're going to be like last year's Michigan. You know, they're going to have a good enough defense to still maybe be able to scare some people, but they're not going to approach the playoff because you have to have a quarterback to make the playoff.
As crazy as it sounds, guys, two games that could be pivotal to the playoff. Oklahoma, Michigan, week two. That's not that crazy. That's a primetime game. But, you know, Blake, you talked about them as a team that maybe if things all click, if Mateer's as good as we say it is. And then how about Illinois, Indiana, middle of September? I mean, Indiana made the playoff last year, and you look at their two schedules, and it's like if Illinois can beat Indiana or vice versa, both of those teams have a chance to do some noise. So, yeah, that's the beauty of the expanded playoff is – games like that could end up being pivotal towards who makes the playoff.
Yeah, and then, you know, another one that's kind of interesting, because we all think, like, going into the Big Ten, like, everybody circles Ohio State, Michigan, you know, Penn State and Ohio State, those games. But another one that I'm pretty interested in is, I believe, Penn State, don't they host Oregon this year?
Yes. That's the whiteout.
September 27th.
Yeah, that is obviously not a traditional Big Ten clash with Oregon still being the newcomer. But again, I don't think it's a slam dunk on Oregon. If we're ranking like Big Ten games and
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.